When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Which member left a demanding corporate career and moved to another continent to spend more time with family? Find out by going to www.bookinterrupted.com/members and get to know us a little more.
Parental guidance is recommended because this episode has mature topics and strong language. Here are some moments you can look forward to during this episode of Book Interrupted.
It's my implicit bias.
Not the vibe, hey.
Makes me sick.
Wow.
That's really interesting though, hey?
Yeah. Like I have a distaste reaction.
Yeah.
What a mom.
25 years later, she's just like, I'm going to wait and see.
That's insane, right?
Totally. It's such a motherly.
I loved it. I loved it so much.
Yeah. It feels
like vibes, yeah. Right? Like she knew.
From being lost and taken versus given up is such a different in your psyche.
Yeah, and there's lots of good orphanages. I'm not like...
Totally. So when he went back and was like, I have to do it by myself. I have to do this on my own with Larry.
With Larry.
Yeah, with Larry. Yeah, exactly.
My body and soul. The inflammation is the goal. Try to learn something new.
My body and soul. Without being disrupted, mind, body, and soul. Inspiration is the goal, and we're gonna talk it out on Book Interrupted.
Welcome to Book Interrupted, a book club for busy people to connect and one that celebrates life's interruptions. During this book cycle, we're reading Sarah's book pick, A Long Way Home, by Saru Brerley. This book was made into a movie in 2016 called Lion and stars Dev Patel, Sunny Padwar, and Nicole Kidman. Saru became lost on a train in India at the age of 5. Not knowing the name of his family or where he was from, he survived for weeks on the streets of Kolkata before being taken into an orphanage and adopted by a couple in Australia. Despite being happy with his new family, Saru always wondered about his origins. When he was a young man, the advent of Google Earth led him to pore over satellite images of the country for landmarks he recognized. And one day, after years of searching, he miraculously found what he was looking for. He then set off on a journey to find his mother. Let's listen in to this episode's group discussion.
I just realized in Meredith's background, you have the book.
This is the Henrietta book. But we're talking about a different one, but I already set it up and I was like, I'm going to leave it there.
Who's got this book? Lindsay, do you have this book? I think I see this book in your background.
I have this one.
Well, I have this version. Same thing.
There you go. That's nice, though.
Yeah.
Because I'll tell you what, that is what made me enjoy this.
That, yes. Lindsay's, right?
Him?
Yeah. Purely him. Yeah.
Yes, totally.
And the little kid. Oh, the little kid.
Oh my God,
cute.
The little kid was very heartbreakingly cute and like innocent and vulnerable.
I couldn't find the movie. Where did you guys find this movie?
It's called Lion. The movie is called this.
I know it's called Lion.
Oh.
For me, it was on Prime.
Prime Video.
Okay, should we do an intro? Should you do an intro?
Yeah, I'll do one.
Yeah. Let's get organized.
Yep.
Yeah.
Let's get organized, seeing as we're almost done.
Yeah.
Totally. It'll be easy for editing. Okay. Welcome to our group discussion on my book choice, A Long Way Home by Saru Brerley. Is it Brerley?
Let me see the name.
I thought it was Brierley, but
that's how I would pronounce it. Yeah.
Okay, Brierley. I tried to listen to him saying his name, but he has such a thick Aussie accent.
Yeah.
I was like,
that didn't help.
Not helping. It didn't help at all.
Maybe you could try it with an Aussie accent.
And the movie is called Lion.
Also, is it ghostwritten or it has a co-writer?
It is ghostwritten. It is. I did some research.
Okay, yes. So tell me more about what ghostwriting means. Lindsay
did the research.
Okay.
So ghostwriting means when somebody will write the book in the style of the person who's telling the story. So they do a lot of interviews. They often record a lot of interviews. They go with them. So in this case, the ghostwriter's name is Larry Buttrose, and he...
Pardon?
Larry Buttrose. Buttrose. Okay. Buttrose. That's sure. Really...
Yeah. Kim just needed to make sure there.
Buttrose. Okay. Buttrose. Yep. Gotcha.
Buttrose. And he was hired by Penguin Books, and he only had 4 months to research the whole thing, do any personal interviews, and write the whole book. Wow. So he did it in 4 months.
That's so crazy.
He has a PhD in creative writing from Adelaide University. Sorry, a 3-month deadline to do everything.
That's like time. University and, bullshit.
Yeah. So he was told to write in Saru's voice. So he had to study his idioms and manner of speech over lots of meetings, and he went with him to India. He met his family. He met his family in Hobart. He did the train trip with him to relive everything. So he was there through the whole thing when Saru was going back to see his family. So, and then he took all of those words and all of the interviews and then wrote the book. So it's all the voice of Saru, but the actual writing of it and putting it together was by Larry Buttrose.
Okay.
Wow. Yeah. I love that.
So when he went back and was like, I have to do it by myself. I have to do this on my own with Larry.
With Larry.
No. Oh, yeah, with Larry. Yeah, exactly.
But did he do it by himself first and then with Larry? Or was that all a big scam?
I don't know. I don't think so, but maybe.
But
maybe.
Does Larry get like a pass because he's the ghost writer? You know what I mean?
Yeah. There is a photo somewhere of him with the family, but he's not in anything else. So.
Depends on if you believe in ghosts. Yeah.
That's why the end of the book where he's retracing going back on the train was really long and drawn out for me. But maybe that's because the ghost writer was actually there. So he's like, oh, I can write a lot about this trip.
Yeah,
because
maybe.
I dared witness it. Because I felt like that area could have been cut down, way down.
I'm telling you, like, from where he began looking for the station could have been cut down. I did not need a play-by-play of his everyday 8 hours a day Google searches.
Every step he took.
Like,
I agree with that. I feel like when books and authors do that, they take away so much from the main point, because then all you're thinking is, like, move on. You know, like, I get the point. Let's move on. For me, anyways, that's kind of what sticks in my head. I'm like, it was good, except for, you know.
You're still looking.
Yeah.
Yeah, like, we get it. For 8 chapters, you're looking, but if the looking was different somehow, right?
It changed somehow.
Yeah.
Part of that's probably this 3-month deadline, and they probably said we also want X number of words.
Still, those things make me angry.
I blame Penguin.
Right? Because they create this shitty book then. Yeah. Right, like, it has to have this many words and in this amount of time
on an incredible story.
The story, that's the thing. They already knew the story was going to be good, so they're like, it can be rushed, it's fine.
Like, yes, exactly, that's my point. I feel bad because it's a memoir, so I don't ever want to really cast judgment on someone's actual experience, and I don't even know how to say it, like, a delicate memoir, right? Like, it's a kind of a traumatic story, like, blah 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 blah, right? But the book itself was terrible. Did not like it at all because of the way. And I'll tell you this too, I listened to it on tape. This was one of my audiobooks. And so the Australian Indian combo was also hard for me to listen to. But I think that I might be biased against Australians. I just
don't like an Australian accent.
Anytime info's coming at me Australian, I'm automatically like, less, please.
Really? I love the Australian accent.
Yes, I don't.
Kim, it's very English of you.
Is it? Because, yeah, maybe it's in my DNA, because I love British accents. My heritage is British.
Your mom's from England, dad, and England, yeah.
Right?
Oh, yeah.
But, yeah, Australian, like...
It's like something that was put into you, and you didn't even know. Like, subtle things growing up, maybe, from your life.
It's my implicit bias.
Not the vibe, hey?
Makes me sick.
Wow!
That's really interesting, though, hey?
Yeah. Like, I have a distaste reaction.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. No, fair. And I know, obviously, he grew up in Australia majority of his life, right? Tell me why I was surprised he had an Australian accent. Like, and so just dumb. Like, I was like, when I watched the movie, I was like, oh, well, obviously. But, you know,
you're reading it in your own voice.
Totally.
And you have an Australian accent.
Well, yeah. And I was also, he's from India. It's
a different accent.
Exactly. And I was like, no, it's your surroundings. It's not typically where you're born unless you stay there, right?
Yeah because it's like if you see an Asian person and then all of a sudden they have an Australian accent, right? It's just like it's
totally
a code shift in your head because you're like, this is what these people sound like, this is what those people sound like. It's hugely stereotypical, right? But there's some that are more rare crossovers, so they, I guess they come off as more surprising.
But anybody with a Canadian accent, no matter what, they're like, you're like, yeah, whatever, right?
Yes,
it's just because it's Australia. You know,
my friend who I went to university with, who's German, learned English in Australia. So when she speaks English, it's with an Australian accent, which to me, of course, I think, well, if you learn English, it's going to sound like me in my head. So it was always confusing.
Yeah, exactly.
But it was great. Like, she had a lovely accent. Like that. It was just, that's how, you know, if you learn English in England, you're going to sound British. If you learn English in Canada, you're going to sound Canadian.
Even if you go to England for 6 weeks, you start to sound a little bit British. And I'm sure the same thing would happen if you go to Australia. Like, you start to sound like the people you're surrounded by, even though that's not your base. And it goes away when you come back to where you're from.
Yeah, when I went to Asia, not that I can speak South Korean or Japanese very well, but I noticed when I came back, a lot of people will trail. So like, say they're saying dap da, it'll be dap da, you know, so they'll trail and I'll be like, hey. You know, like, I would come back and just say stuff like that. And I was like, oh, you know, it's the Asian in me, but
it's the Asian in me.
I'm so cultured, you know. But no, it is so true how quickly you start picking up and you don't really even realize it, maybe until you go back and you're like, wait, this is not how I normally speak.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, even mannerisms. Like, I know when I was in China, people go, Well, instead of saying, you know, when you go in Canada, when people talk, you're like kind of encouraging them to keep on talking. In China, they go, And when I came back, I noticed I did it to people, and I only noticed it when I came back because it was
different.
It's like a contrast.
I was like, I didn't know I had adopted those little mannerisms, and I have obviously have them from here too. Like, you don't realize until you go back to where you're from. Mm-hmm. And you kind of fly back into your normal self that you're like, oh.
It's like programming.
These mannerisms up. Yeah.
Interesting how easily it happens and we don't even notice. We can adapt just so quickly. Yeah.
Yeah, when I moved back from England, I had a British, kind of a weird British lilt for a long time.
Yeah, because it depends on like how long you're there.
I was there 2 years. So.
Exactly. Okay. So you became a little whiffy-briffy.
Yes.
Did Kim just love hearing you talk when you got back?
I would have been like, speak to me more, Lindsay.
Yeah.
You weren't here. You were already moved out. Yeah.
I don't think we were in each other's lives. Yeah.
Oh, okay. Okay, yeah.
Because that was when Sarah moved to Toronto, because we lived together. So she moved in and I moved back from, that was when I moved back from Australia. So.
So well traveled.
Lindsay's a traveler.
I've lived lots of places.
Yeah.
Oh, I love that. Yeah, that's cool.
It was fun. Cool. Now I'm in Toronto forever. No. Eventually we'll move again.
Yeah. Fair.
Anyway, sorry, Mayor. Yes, what were you going to say? Probably
I was
about the book.
Say, I agree with the writing. I didn't enjoy the writing a lot. It was okay. It wasn't like it didn't grate on me or anything, but I felt like it could have moved along in spots. But what do you guys think about the story? Because I thought the story was,
insane.
First of all, the kid who needed to remember a 5-year-old just repeating everything he can remember to himself, like that he retained this memory and he's like, I have to hold on to this. That alone is amazing, how determined he was to hold on to his family, even though he was in a different country. Like, he held on to it. It's amazing.
And his memories didn't change. Because I find sometimes I'll remember back onto some things. And slowly over time, they change, right? Because you're just remembering the last time you remembered. And it totally could have been a case because what he found them 25 years later, I believe it was, he could have totally forgot.
Your brain changes a lot in 25 years.
Exactly, right? And just even the landmarks you're thinking of, they could have been gone. They could have been different. And it was just like the universe was telling him to go find his home again.
That's like an interesting parallel, right? Because the landscape of your brain can change in that amount of time, as well as the physical landscape could actually change And yeah. Luckily for him, he was able to maintain his landscape, and the landscape that he came from didn't change very much. So he was able to find it on Google Earth or whatever when he finally finished his research, I guess.
Eight chapters later. No.
But also the fact that his mom didn't move, she still had this hope. Her other children moved, and mm-hmm. she just was like, I'm staying here just in case one day he comes back. Still.
What a mom.
25 years later, she's just like, I'm going to wait and see.
That's insane, right?
Totally. It's such a motherly.
I loved it. I loved it so
much. Yeah, it feels
like vibes, yeah. right? Like she knew, you know?
Yeah.
She knew.
So many people say they have that motherly instinct when something bad happens to them. They know, you know, they're like, no, I can tell that something bad happened, or they've moved on. Yeah, for her to stay, incredible. That's just.
Incredible.
Oh, yeah.
It's probably incredibly painful, too. Living in hope all those years. Mm-hmm. When the guy was like, come with me, I'm going to take you to see your mother. I was like, oh my God. Yay. Like you're like cheering for him, but it's, oh my God.
I couldn't even imagine the emotions. Yeah.
Yeah.
And that she knew because she went to the mosque that day and prayed to God to see her son. And then he came that day. I was like bawling my eyes out when I read that part.
It is an emotional story. Like, it's absolutely incredible. Yes. And we hear so many, oh, the internet's bad. Technology is bad. Especially as a kid, you're told that, right? For it to be how he got home. I just love those stories. It's really cool. And just to be a kid and remember all of that. There's no chance I would have found my way home. There's just,
When was this book written?
I thought it was 2014, but I could be wrong.
I got it here. Hold on.
Because when he was looking for his home in this book, a lot has changed technology-wise between now and then. His search would have been so much different now, I think. Well, he could have just asked AI, get AI to do it. Here's the information.
Or had he been born in a different time when the internet didn't even exist?
It was 2013.
If he was born even 10 years earlier,
he would have been done.
Yeah, exactly. Or
it would have been 35 years.
Yeah, and his mom could have passed in that time, right? Like so many different things could have happened, and it was just so obvious that they were meant to be reunited at some point in their life.
It's also interesting that he, as a 5-year-old, mispronounced his name. Right? And he's like, well, now this is my name, even though it was Sharu, not Saru.
And that's why the movie is called Lion, right? Because that's
what it stands for.
Yeah.
Or what it translates to. I can see that, though, mispronouncing his own name. Like, you know how kids, they call whoever whatever because they can't say whatever, right? Yeah. So maybe he just couldn't do shh yet. So he's like, oh, I'm Saru. And then who knows?
Cute.
5 years old. It's amazing. I liked also at the end, they said that it's shocking that he survived for a few weeks in Calcutta at five.
A five-year-old?
All by himself?
I wonder if that's partly due to how his life was when he lived with his mom, that they were already living in such squalor that...
And he had a lot of responsibility as a five-year-old. He had to take care of his little sister, so he was resourceful already. That's true.
Totally right.
I think that too.
He was already looking.
And like survivor skill.
Yeah, he was begging people for food. He was, you know, like, so I wonder if that's a really big part of how he was able to survive for that long.
Yeah, like if he had more privilege, he would have been less.
And how about the guy that saved his life twice? Saved him from drowning twice?
Why didn't they put that? Oh, hey!
There's balloons!
Balloons! Saved his life twice!
Oh, I love.
Why did that happen?
I have no idea.
Saved his life, and it's a celebration.
Wow. Saved his life twice. Sorry, for people listening on the Zoom video, all of a sudden balloons just started rising up on my screen when I said, how about that guy that saved his life twice?
We can't get it to happen again.
That was magical, just like the story.
Why wouldn't they put that in the movie?
The balloons?
No, the guy saved his life twice.
I don't know why. Sometimes when movies, they cut out, I feel, such important things.
I like the movie better than the book. They added in some storylines-ish, I guess. But I also thought that the movie was a little bit focusing on weird things. I don't know. Did you guys like the movie?
The different focus.
I thought the movie was really good.
Okay.
I enjoyed the movie a lot. I watched it first.
You saw actually. The movie first. That's what I was going to ask too. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
I watched the movie afterwards. I think I kind of went in and set myself up for failure because I was expecting it to be like, I don't know if you guys have watched this movie, The Impossible.
Yeah.
And I was expecting it to be just catching my attention at every scene and just really, really heartfelt. And I didn't get that same feeling with the movie. I think that's why I didn't super love the movie myself. And it may have been different if I went into it without kind of expecting that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Usually when I watch a movie after reading a book, it's because the book was so good that you're now excited to be able to see it as a movie. I didn't think that the book was so great. So I watched the movie out of duty for this podcast, you know what I mean? Rather than a desire to really watch it. I was just kind of like, well, I mean, it was okay, but I don't know if there was something about the relationship, like his relationship with his girlfriend, or they did some focusing in other areas that wasn't really part of the book. Didn't really enhance the movie. And I was just kind of like, hey, well, okay.
Yeah, weren't they fighting in the movie? I saw the movie a while ago too.
Yeah.
Didn't they fight in
from the
movie?
Book?
A little
it sounds
bit.
Sounds like she was very supportive.
He told his mom sooner, I think, in the book too. And he was like not telling his mom. Like there was these other kind of themes playing out in the movie that weren't really true to the book and didn't really help the movie either. So I was kind of like, why is it like this?
And then also in the movie, they made it that a woman brought him to her apartment to take care of him. And then this guy almost tried to traffic him. But in the book, it was these men that were trying to do it. What was the point of making it a woman? It doesn't change the fact that a group of adults were trying to traffic him.
Yeah.
Why did they make it like that? Like that was a sweet part of the movie, but it was horrible being like, oh, he can't trust anyone.
It's, yeah.
Even a woman.
It was unnecessary. Yeah, so it was unnecessary to make it a woman.
Well,
yeah.
I think that for me, that definitely compelled like an up and down of emotions because you're like, oh, he's found a woman. She'll take care of him. She'll nurture him. Oh, yeah. She seems so nice. And then she had him and it was kind of cool. And then the man came and you're like, oh.
A man.
Oh my goodness, the woman was not what she seemed.
The audience is less likely to trust the man anywhere because our unconscious bias says man is going to hurt the child, the woman's going to protect the child. But
it's safe, right? And then the safe was not safe. Oh, like so it was a good little twist, I guess.
Right.
In an otherwise non-twisty tale.
Yeah, that's true.
Manipulation by the movie makers.
I liked the concept of what it's like if you are adopted in any kind of scenario and the idea of feeling like you love your family so much that raised you, but you also feel like you're missing something from your biological family, I guess. And so I thought that was an interesting idea of what it would be like to feel so much love for two different things and to try to have them both in your heart at the same time.
Be loyal to both loves.
Yeah. Well, and I think that's what helped him to maintain that memory that Mary was kind of impressed that he did since he was five, because it would be a constant reminder, like, this isn't actually my family. I can't forget my family. His circumstances were so unique too. It's not like he was given up for adoption. He was actually just lost. And then he's like, I guess I'll go with this other family. This is the best thing I got going for me right now. Like,
yeah. In the book, now that I know it's a ghostwriter, I don't feel like it was him. But in the book, he mentioned so much. Like, I felt like he was struggling with wanting to make sure his family in Australia felt loved, despite him having this desire to see his family that he lost, right? They just kept on repeating that narrative so much through the book. I thought he was feeling insecure about making his family in Australia feel loved. But now that I know it's a ghostwriter, he was just
making sure that message was in there. He's like, make sure you put this message in.
Yeah.
He's like, okay, I'll put it in over and over.
Yeah.
Yeah, when I was listening to the book, I thought he wrote it himself because I didn't think it was well written. Right. So I was like, well, obviously, like, yeah, he's not
an amateur writer. It's okay.
Right. Let's give him a break. Exactly. I thought there was maybe, I don't know, it's going to be terrible if it's like 70,000 words or whatever. But I thought there was maybe five sentences that I was like, I get it. Like, that's a great sentence. Good job. Edit away all the
Leave
rest
it
of
that.
The information. This book is five sentences long and we're good. Like, it was a couple lines where I was like, you've done it. You've conveyed exactly what I think you were trying to convey. You know,
do we know what ethnicity the ghostwriter is?
White guy.
perhaps a similar ethnicity may have done better.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, because I'm just thinking, like, it's so hard for... Okay.
There's Larry.
Okay.
Good old Butt Rose.
I'm wondering if that's kind of why, because it almost seems like a disconnect. So I read like the summary on Google, just kind of when we had all picked our books, and then going to read the actual book, there was a little bit of a disconnect in how intense the story maybe should have been.
Totally.
Maybe there's some correlation between not having lived a life like that in any way.
Because I thought that too. I was like, maybe this, again, I'm thinking the like amateur writer is writing his story. And I felt that disconnect too. And I thought it must have been protective. He was dissociative because how else are you going to get through that than, you know, separating from the experience, right? But it's really just because it was another person writing it that didn't actually have the experience, I guess.
Yeah, and it's hard to write a book in 3 or 4 months. That is extremely hard. And then to try to do it in somebody else's voice. I can't imagine.
Why did they make that deadline? Like, do you have any info about like why it had to be such a fast turnaround?
I don't know. They had heard about the story and so they thought we need to get this book out probably when it's still fresh in people's minds, is my guess, so that they could sell the book. Because if it's years later, they're going to be like, I kind of remember that from years ago. So.
And that is hard. Like,
maybe they wanted to make the book and the movie back to back too, right? Mm-hmm. I don't know. I don't know when the movie was made, but.
Maybe it was like...
No, I think the movie was years later. Mm-hmm. I thought the movie was 2017 or something, but
and
I can look
it up. Do you know why there's a ghostwriter? Why didn't he just write the... I guess maybe he didn't feel he could...
It's hard to write a book.
Especially in 3 months.
Yeah, fair enough. You're like, I can't write a book in 3 months. Give me 3 years, maybe.
Well, that's why I feel like the book was the way it was, too, because it sounds like the ghostwriter just wrote down literally what the guy was saying. That's what 8 chapters was. He's like, okay, then what else did you do? Okay, and then you went back on Google, and then you went to Google again. Okay, and then you went to a train station, right? Okay, yep, got it. Like, that's what it read like. Like, he literally step-by-step said everything.
Writing it till midnight to get the deadline.
Yeah, and not focusing on like the most important parts, I feel, but I don't know. Again, I'm not a writer. I don't know super how to tell a good story. I can make people laugh though, but you know, not an intense story. So maybe there's a means to the madness. It wasn't a good means in this case, in that stretch.
I also think being a ghostwriter for someone that's part of two cultures, he's Australian and he's Indian, so he represents both these cultures. I felt like sometimes when he was in India, the way he was describing India made me think he's not from India. Like, I was like, oh, he's so disconnected from his culture now, but maybe because it was the ghostwriter. Because some of the things he described, I think that maybe he wouldn't have. It was just a normal thing. I don't know, he made a comment about the hotel room or something. The way he said it, it was like, who cares? Yeah, hotel rooms in India don't look like hotel rooms in Australia. Yeah, we know.
Yeah, like you could go to every continent and they'd be different.
Right. So I thought that maybe because he was so disconnected from his culture, but now so much has opened up for me for this book because then it was like ghostwriter.
Once he got to India, the story did kind of pick up though. There were so many nice people that were helping him. He goes there and he doesn't remember how to speak the same language as his family. And there's people who are just like, we're just going to sit with you all day and be your translator. And how about the one girl where he's like, oh, I'll pay you. And she was insulted. She's like, no, I'm doing this to be friends. Like, because I like you. That was one of the strengths of the stories, because a lot of it was talking about the relationships and all the people that helped him become who he is today. Some bad things happened and some good things happened. But in the end, like, there was a lot of good in the world and that helped him survive and become who he was. I like also that it talked about, although this tragic thing happened to him in his youth, it's hard to think like what would have happened if that hadn't happened. It's like, in some ways there's some good that came of it, right? His family did better when he was gone. Like, there's these complicated feelings. Like, how do I feel about this tragic event that my remaining sister and brother were able to get an education and pull themselves out of poverty a little bit? The tragic thing, but a spoiler alert, his other brother, that he didn't know what happened to him, and that's so tragic. Trying to like get his head around all these things. Something bad happened to him and his family, and some good came of it too. I wish there was more focus on that than the like And then I looked at Google again. But when you got to India and started exploring those things, that for me, like, I really like that part of the book.
I totally agree. I love that you just said that about the good in the world. Because something like terrible happened to him. Oh, is that
what is going on? What? With my Zoom.
This is what Kim was talking about. We are being gaslit right now, okay?
I told you. Thank you very much.
Yeah, thumbs up.
I do that a lot anyway, so... Good job, Zoom.
That's so weird.
Like random thumbs up. I'm sorry, if you guys want to know what we're talking about, you have to watch the YouTube video because my Zoom keeps on adding link things in bio. To my video. I wonder if it's a setting.
It must be, but it seems to be like remotely responding to words, but then when the same words are said again later, it does not respond. We haven't hacked out why. Anyway,
I want you to keep it on.
Yeah, don't change anything. Don't change. It's wonderfully surprising.
What'll happen next?
Did you also switch your mug?
Yeah.
These are not my cups. I'm recording from a remote location today.
Totally.
Yeah, because while you were talking, I saw that and oh there it is again. The thumbs up just came back, guys.
That's the computer. Good job. You found the difference, Ashley.
Positive affirmations, they really just help you because that made me feel so happy.
Just, yeah, right?
I got it right.
Thumbs up. Totally.
Yeah, totally.
Nice.
Wow, very cool.
Anyway, sorry.
Yeah. What were you saying, Kim, before the sorry, Kim,
before
do
the
you remember?
I remember. Right. I was trying to say that I think that it's a really great message that Mare's pulling out of the book because literally as someone who cares about other people, having them all of a sudden disappear from your life is like the worst thing you can think of, right? Rather than this being a story about how terrible the world is and all the bad things that could have happened or even did happen on his journey. I like that she's highlighting that there's good people in the world. Good things can happen. And I love the theme of all of the people it took to get him where he's at, from adoptive parents to orphanage workers to train station drivers to other kids on the street who gave him a piece of cardboard to sleep on. I think that's a really great, just saying that, Mare, makes me like this better now. I didn't like it. But you said that and now I'm like, oh, okay, I like it a little bit. And then the other thing I just wanted to propose to the group, what do you think about, even this kind of touches on Lindsay's point about like that love and the adjustment or whatever of an adopted situation, the contrast created by his adopted brother. He's an example of potentially how the trauma and impact of the story could have played out. That boy wasn't as adjusted. He had other issues. I don't know what his story was to get to the family either, but like, and you had what seems to be a well-adjusted Saru, and then this brother who is struggling just way harder with the exact same set of circumstances. I mean, once he gets to the family, the circumstances that brought him there obviously could have been much different. What do you think about that? Nothing.
No.
Everyone's like, it's a lot to think about is the thing, because their experiences weren't the same going in, and you know, the families they came from and the things that happened between being adopted. The one kid wasn't adopted quickly. He was there in like a bad situation. I think he experienced some abuse while he was waiting for the adoption to go through. And then he has to try to deal with that, but so young without the tools, I think.
And do we know, was he given up for adoption? Right. So then is he dealing with that abandonment? I don't remember details of that child's backstory.
Yeah, he was given up.
And just that difference from being lost and taken versus given up is such a different in your psyche. You know, it's a difference in my family doesn't want me versus my family is probably looking and missing me.
Yeah
And just on a psychological perspective, it's so interesting that you have these two kids who have both gone through clearly not great childhoods to get to being adopted and where they were, both have such different problems in so many ways. You know, like, it's abuse happening to someone and traumatic events doesn't mean you're gonna be XYZ. You know, it just it shows up in many different ways. And I think that's neat. It's a little frustrating sometimes because you're just like, why? But it is neat to see how different people act from trauma just in general.
So maybe, like, unique.
Yeah. And I wonder too about genetically, like, obviously Saru's mom was a believer who, you know, stayed positive, and they talk about how happiness and faith and all those things are partly genetic. It's our capability of feeling that. So some people live on this scale and some people live on this scale and some people live on that scale. Like, it just depends. So being this mom that, you know, stayed there and had hope and all that, you know, and he had hope. I don't know. Maybe there's a genetic component there.
Maybe his capacity for hope was different, is what you're saying.
And
yeah, maybe.
I get it.
Love is protective, right? So regardless of what their life was when they were together, there was never any question that mother loved children and each sibling loved each other, right? Like, they all had that love, right? So that is protective genetically, or at least in your systems when you get set up, right? You're not set up already hyper aware of danger because you have that, whereas the other brother may not have ever had that set up. Considering that he was given, like, he may have come from much more difficult circumstances and didn't have this solid foundation of love. Mm-hmm. The other thing I thought was crazy, this is kind of off topic now, but is the fact that he could travel in his own country and be outside of his scope of language. Like, how scary is that, that this child went far enough that now he doesn't even speak the language? That's another hurdle. He's not only lost, but he's like linguistically lost too. It would be like if we got lost and all of a sudden ended up in China, like such a different language, like trying to find help for yourself there. And everyone's like, I don't even know what you're saying. Like, that's so brutal.
India is a huge country. Like, he literally went across the whole country. And the fact that he kept on getting on trains to go back, there's so many train stations in India. That's how people travel through train.
And like, the fact that he tried and he tried, like, man,
yeah, the whole factor too, Schweitz. Yeah,
and just as a five-year-old, like, not understanding, right? So he probably is like getting more lost even though he's just trying to go home, like,
yeah. What do you guys feel? I'm a bit torn with international adoption because part of me feels like, so they're Indian and they went to Australia and they're adopted, and I feel like all kids deserve love, but his parents, they never went back to India, although they were worried and whatever about going back. They tried, right?
And the kids, yeah, were
but
ready.
Part of me is like, his Australian parents will never understand the things that him and his brother have gone through or circumstances they've been in because they're Indian. Personally, I'm not sure how I feel about adopting a child from a different culture and then bringing it to your culture.
In the book, it seemed like he was trying to describe that the parents at least tried to bring some of his culture into their home. I mean, probably in a very super light white way, like, oh, here we have Indian food on Sundays. And here, I can't remember what they had, but they had a couple things. And I remember him noticing them. And the implication was that they were trying to not just be like, now you're white. You know what I mean? Even though he's totally not, right?
Mm-hmm. They wanted to respect that, but they didn't have the knowledge to be able to do it in an immersive way that you would normally would if you were living there or Indian.
Yeah, they've joined societies and they try to join other Indian groups in their community, but they were.
So I think that is an important piece that would influence my opinion on international adoption, right? Is it a token, right? Oh, I want a cute little whatever baby, or oh, I'm saving, you know, a whatever baby. Like, is it ego? Like, what are your motivations and what are your preparations to make sure that the child that you're bringing into your family, their needs are taken into consideration? And a huge piece of that might be cultural, right? If those things have been adequately like sussed out, then I may be supportive. Because if the bottom line is someone's left in an abusive, overpopulated orphanage, or they get culture ripped, I might choose culture rip, right? Mm-hmm. But if it's, I don't even know if this happens, but like this, like when Madonna started adopting babies from Malawi or whatever, there was an uproar about it, right? And did she pay the family? Like, and there was all these ideas, right? So I don't want rich white people to be able to all of a sudden access poor non-white children because they want them, you know? Like, so it's really, really complicated. So I wouldn't be able to be like, I'm totally pro or I'm totally against. I don't think I could even come to that without knowing the exact individual case we're judging.
Well, now I don't know fully, so I'm going to say some things about this and then more research needs to be done about it. But I do know that there's a lot of issues with orphanages in places like India, because if they look worse and they look bad and they look poor, then people are going to pay more money to adopt the children. So a lot of children, especially those where people go and do holidays where they go and help at orphanages and stuff, parents are putting their kids in there or selling their kids because they get money for it because the orphanage looks worse. More research needs to be done. So don't, you know, look into
it. What you're saying is, yeah, if there's something that can be exploited for money,
yeah,
somebody will do it.
And it is.
So. Right. And not all places are doing that.
Yeah. But not all places. Will. Thank you.
And the ones that are trying to exploit the situation might be really good at making it look like you want to
save
them.
That's
what I'm trying to say.
Yeah. They may be really good at manipulating the person who's seeing what's going on. Totally. That makes sense.
This is similar to even trafficking, though, right?
I was going to say it's a level of trafficking, children trafficking, that has to do with it, too.
Right? Like, because there's parents who are just in such depths of poverty, they don't even want to give their children away. But like people come in and they're like, oh, if they come work over here as this, we'll give you this much money. And then that person is actually just ripped out and trafficked. Like it's not mm-hmm. even legit, right? Like, so when you say that, it really brushes up against that whole MO.
Yeah.
It's one of those situations where like for people who are really trying to help somebody, you know, that's what you always find. When there's a place where somebody is trying to help, there's maybe somebody else coming in trying to manipulate and exploit the situation. And when there's children involved, it makes it very messy.
Yeah. And there's lots of good orphanages. I'm not like, totally. But now that
I'm saying like it's frustrating book. For the good not orphanages all. Because they're not going to try to make it look really bad there. They're probably trying to make it nice, right? Mm-hmm. Like they're, if you really care, you're trying to make it.
Yeah. I think it's all about intention, both with the orphanages and adoption agencies and the people applying to adopt. If they're, you know, like you guys were saying, do they just want a token to say, look how good I am, look what I'm doing, et cetera, et cetera? Or do they genuinely want to help these kids have a loving home, help teach them, you know? And it is really hard with the cultural thing. I think if you're going to go the route of adoption, again, and I don't know how adoption fully works. I don't know if you apply for anyone or if you can say like, oh, I want someone like me, etc. But I think if you're going into that, you need to at least be versed in the culture of the child that is coming to you. Like that is your duty. Yeah, I just think you need to at least understand in some ways. So it is such a difficult and touchy subject though, right? Yeah,
that's how I feel too. Like it's just because I have biracial children, so mm-hmm. some things that my kids go through, Mamadou understands more, and some things I understand more. But because we're their parents, it's easier for us to have conversations with them about certain things because they're both part mm-hmm. me and part him. But if you're completely separate from someone's culture, I think you need to work a lot harder if you're going to. Anyways. I toyed with that while I was reading the book. We have just 5 minutes left. So everyone should go around and say if they recommend the book and or the movie. I can go first. I would recommend the movie, but I probably, the book, just understand it's not well written, but the story is amazing. So I would probably watch the movie.
That's what I was going to say. I'm like, I recommend the story.
The story. Yeah. Yeah.
The story's amazing.
I was going to say that. I was like, I recommend this story. I haven't seen the movie because I don't know. I don't know how you guys... I kept on looking like, where is this thing playing? And I couldn't find it. But now you're saying...
It's off now. That's why.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I'm lucky that I got in there.
That's why I watched it first. Mm-hmm. I watched it first because it's like, this will be expired in 2 days. I was like, oh, shoot. So I watched it and then... It went off Amazon Prime.
I even couldn't get it at my library.
I was just going to say, you can't get it at the library. Like, it's an old Nicole Kidman movie. Like, I feel like it should be around somewhere.
No, I couldn't get it there. Uh-huh. Maybe I can do, like, interlibrary loans or something. Where I am, you can get a book from anywhere in the province. But you have to, like,
also, you don't need to go on a long way home to try to watch this movie because it's not worth it. It's not like you're going to be finding your mother at the end of it. It's just another mediocre movie. So like if you don't see the movie, you'll probably be okay. It's kind of my...
But I'd recommend the story. The book had its slow parts, but like that's okay. There was some really good stuff in there. So it's a very interesting story. It's amazing. It's an amazing story.
Yeah, I think it's a very heartwarming story.
And the pictures in the middle are awesome.
Yeah, I love when a book has pictures.
Oh, me too.
Yeah, I like the pictures.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's nice too.
I would personally recommend watching interviews versus reading the book or the watching the movie, because I think you're getting more of a genuinely authentic maybe retelling or just how he felt, really. But I do think the story is so empowering and beautiful. So, I mean, if you can't any other way, then I would pick the book over the movie personally.
Hmm. I would wonder if he's done podcasts. You know what I mean? Because that would be a good way to hear the story, hopefully directly from him.
This podcast?
He should do our podcast.
If he wants to come on.
Reach out.
Oh, look.
He might. All right. We've got a couple people come on, so you never know.
Yeah. Yeah. Totally. Yep.
So yeah, I thought it was a beautiful story. It's nice to read something that has a happy ending in this world, and something that it's a sad story, but it has so much hope through it. I would much prefer that than something that's really bad at the end.
That's what I said in my personal journal. I'm like, it has a happy ending. So that's all I even want ever. Yeah. So
yeah,
even though slow parts, happy ending.
It would be great to hear from himself what he thinks about the international adoption. You know what I mean? Like,
what's his name? Saru Brierley. We're reaching out to you. Come on our podcast.
Mm-hmm. All right, I'll try.
We have balloons and thumbs up. What more do you need?
Yeah, we'll give you a couple thumbs up. Maybe.
I don't know. Yeah. If I say something, you might get some kind of emoji. We don't know.
Only from Marilyn.
This interruption is brought to you by Unpublished. Do you want to know more about the members and Book Interrupted? Go behind the scenes? Visit our website at www.bookinterrupted.com.
Book Interrupted.
This interruption is brought to you by Border Collies. I have not one, but two. And do you think there's any such thing as a lazy Sunday afternoon anymore? No. These guys are so high energy that we got to get them to the park to play with their balls. Oh, that didn't sound very good. But you know what I mean. We got a good solid game of fetch coming up. Are you wagging your tail? They're here right now looking at me and listening. And they heard me say park. You want to go to the park? Oh, I think you do. Oh, yes, here you are. Okay, well, bookies, I got to go because these little dogs need a run. Bye.
Book Interrupted.
It's book report time. We're going to find out from each member their final thoughts. And do they recommend the book? Let's listen. This is my book report for A Long Way Home. My book pick by Saru Brierley. I think that's how you say his name. I actually watched the movie first. And normally I don't do that unless I don't know there's a book. And then I've happened to watch the movie and someone tells me there's a book. But I end up watching this movie first because I looked to see if it was on any of my streaming services, and it was, but it was about to, you know how they tell you like this one's gonna go soon, and it was, I think it was like in 2 days, so I end up watching it before I started the book. I thought the movie was really great. I think they did an amazing job with it. Obviously there's some things that are different, like, and I understand why, but I feel like when it's a memoir, like you don't get rid of people in the book that are meaningful to the person who wrote the book. And they got rid of one of his brothers in the movie. He just didn't exist. I wonder how people feel about that. Like, what does his brother think? I didn't make the cut? What? So I didn't like that. But I think that the movie did a really good job portraying the book. And I know that last time, one of the episodes we were talking how maybe a short story turned into a movie would be perfect, because maybe it's because it's too long. And I think this movie did a really good job, but it's because I feel like the end dragged on a lot. It's hard to say when it's a memoir, but it was a lot of repetitive feelings that he was having, which I completely understand. Because he's now found his mother, and now the last trip he's going back to the orphanage and reliving the journey he made when he was 5, or trying to, going to all those places he vaguely remembers during that traumatic time, that few weeks that he was on the streets by himself. So it's that part is just so upsetting. And the fact that they were like, they're surprised he survived is amazing. I think the reason the movie was so great is because the very end of the book was very drawn out. I think they're drawing it out maybe to make it a longer novel, I'm not sure. Or just he wanted to put in all his feelings, maybe. So the beginning of the book went super fast for me.
but the end was very slow. So one of the things I loved in the book is that his mom prayed that she would see him the day he came back, and then he came back and she knew it was him, like an answered prayer. I love that. I cried a little bit in that part. I just love that so much. I do feel, and I'm guessing a lot of people that are adopted feel this way. So he was, I guess, so his Australian family didn't feel like he didn't appreciate them and still love them and stuff. I feel like that's a given. Like, clearly he loves his family, but he also has another family that he's discovered, and it doesn't take away. But he repeated that often in the book. So I feel like that was an insecurity for him, that he really wanted to make sure his family in Australia knew that he still loves them. There was a lot of sad things in the book, especially what happened to his brother. And it makes you think about international adoption, obviously. I'm a bit torn on it, especially a little boy from India being adopted by an Australian couple, only because it's like culturally different. And I feel like his culture wasn't maintained. So I have mixed feelings about that. For many reasons. I have biracial children, and I think some of the things that my kids go through, my husband and or myself can deal with because we're their parents, their biological parents. But I don't know how I could understand things that they're going through that has to do with their African culture and vice versa with my husband. So I'm a little bit about that. But he's totally pro it because kids need love and care. So I agree with that as well. So it's a bit, I'm unsure about how I feel about that, but I'm glad he got adopted by a lovely family and that he found his Indian family as well. I think the fact that he looked and found it on Google Earth is amazing, like so amazing. I love that his mom never moved because she never gave up hope that he was alive. This is a spoiler if you haven't read the book. I'm so sad that his brother died and died that same night. So that's difficult because you don't know if he died before or he died looking for him. So that's, I feel sad for him for always having that thought in his mind. Would it be different? Anyway, so would I recommend it? Yes, I liked it. I liked the book. I loved his story. It was a great inspirational story. It all worked out in the end, which I always love. That it's a happy ending. That's what I always want. So it was a super happy ending. And I was happy he found his mother and his family, and now he has two loving families, which is amazing. So that's great. And I can't wait to talk to everyone else about it. Okay, bye.
Hello, hello, hello. It is Lindsay. I'm back here again. I'm very excited to be here with Gap Book Interrupted. Again, just read Sarah's book choice, which my copy says Lion on it, but we all know it's A Long Way Home. And I have a couple of things to confess. So I think I read this book when it first came out a long time ago, and I really had meant to reread it, but I didn't. So last night I read the synopsis just to like remind myself about the book. And then I did also watch the movie, I think when it first came out or a long time ago. And I had planned to rewatch the movie, but I didn't. You know, life happens and busy at work and I don't know, I could give you 100 excuses, but I didn't. And I am just gonna go into the group discussion with the idea that I have read it recently and I remember everything, and I'm gonna see how it goes. So that's it. If I remember, which was so long ago, I definitely think I like the movie. I think I remember liking the book. I love the story. That's about it. So we'll see how this goes. I hope that I'm believable in remembering. I've read a lot of books in my life and I've watched a lot of movies in my life, and I can remember both of them. So that is a good sign that it was something that, at least the story, I remember the story really stuck with me. So, and yeah, I remember the cute little kid and I remember the characters. This is just, I'm just dragging on now. So I'm just going to stop, and thanks for tuning in, and I will talk to you soon. Bye.
Okay. Making my second recording, just getting the camera started now. I am so over Garbage Technology. This is supposed to be my personal journal for A Long Way Home, and really, maybe it should be an interruption about how much I friggin' hate everything to do with computers and their bullshit. Anyway, no, it's going to be a personal journal because I gotta go. So again, I don't have time to double down, double dip, double down. Anyway, okay, back on track. So I also listened to this book on Audible. I had listened to Eat, Pray, Love on Audible. Now I listen to this on Audible because I am taking advantage of the time that I have in the car. I feel great about it. So Eat, Pray, Love had lots of descriptions. Meredith said the book has so many words. And I think it's because Elizabeth Gilbert spends a lot of time like explaining herself or trying to get her message across to her reader with a lot of creativity and expressive words. And it really resonates with me. I really like the way that she writes. I don't like so much the way that she reads her writing, as you may have heard in my previous personal journal, but I like the way that she writes. I say all of this. Yes, I know this is not a personal journal for Eat, Pray, Love. I say all of this because I found the writing for A Long Way Home, like the listening to the writing anyways, super boring. And I mean, this is a crazy story. So, you know, I would say if I hadn't already read the book that there's no way that you could make this story boring because it's just so crazy, like what happened. And I would be wrong because it's really boring. And again, okay, so I also mentioned that I didn't like the way that the book was read in Eat, Pray, Love. I also don't like the way that the book was read for this book. I can't remember who reads it, but I know it's not the actual author, which I think would always be my preference, maybe. But anyway, so it's not the author, it's an actor, I guess, or whatever, who's reading. And I'm not sure why that decision was made, but whatever. And this particular actor is Australian, and I don't know if I have some kind of a negative experience with someone with an Australian accent or what, but that right off the bat I don't like, which I feel terrible saying. Like, how can I say I don't like Australian accents? But here I am, I'm saying it. It just, there's something about them. It could be that there was an annoying person on Big Brother with an Australian accent, and maybe that's my last experience with it. And, you know, watching that person was irritating to me. And so maybe now when I hear an accent, I just feel irritated, like some kind of a association situation I've got going on. But anyway, so that's one strike against it. And then it was just like, I don't know, maybe it's hard to describe how you diligently used Google Earth and Google Maps or whatever to find your missing home in a way that is interesting if it was literally just a tedious exercise of, you know, first I went here, then, like, I don't know. It was really boring. And I feel bad saying that, but I'm saying it nonetheless because it's true. I didn't enjoy listening to it. Also, the same problem with the original audiobook that I have is the tone, again, was like, okay, so not only is it an Australian accent, but it is like really unaffected. I don't know what the right describing words are for this, but it was like a robot, like robotic again. So he's reading his story, parts of it terrifying, parts of it triumphant, and yet always in this tone because blah, 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 blah. And it's just annoying. I would think that part of the benefit to having a book on audio would be the ability to add that extra layer of communication that is volume, tone, expression, you know, the emotion that you can hear in words. Even as I speak right now, this is way more exciting than either of those books. I know this is kind of a combo journal. Sorry, everybody, but it's very closely related for me because I listened to them one after another. And actually, it's going to be funny because I think in our book series, this book isn't until number 3. We've got a book in between each of them. So it's going to be like, why does she keep talking about Eat, Pray, Love? That was so January. Anyway, that's how I feel. That's what I think. And that's the end of that. Good day.
Hey everyone, this is Ashley, and I'm doing my personal journal / book report on the book A Long Way Home. When I first started reading the book, I did look into it on Google, and it said that there is a ghostwriter, and I feel like that's kind of apparent. I think there is this really big disconnect from the true emotions of a lot of the story, but at the end of the day, it's a really important story that needed to be told, and I'm glad that it was written into a book and then produced into a movie. I know not everyone are readers, so to have kind of two different ways to listen to the story is really great. I would recommend the story itself, maybe not so much the book or the movie, if there's other avenues that you can get the information. I don't know if the main character did podcasts or YouTube videos, even interviews or something, I think would be a lot more genuine to the actual story and emotion. However, there are really touching moments in both the book and the movie, and I think that's what really carries both of them, is there are clearly people who are very much in despair, but they're looking for each other, and there's hope, and I think hope is, not to bring it back to the Hunger Games, but hope is what keeps people going, and this story really shows that. It's also really interesting to see how we can use technology to benefit ourselves, and really what determination and hope does. So I'm happy that I got to read the story. Book was slow, but I definitely recommend the story itself. So thank you guys.
So we just finished the group discussion for A Long Way Home, and I enjoyed this story quite a bit. The book was a little bit slow to get through, but it all kind of makes sense. You listen to the group discussion, why that was so. And still, you know, when I read the book, I was kind of taking it as like an amateur's writing. So that didn't really bother me that there was some repetitiveness. I really was looking forward to seeing if he reconnected with his birth family. And spoiler alert, if you need that, he does. So it's really nice. And I especially appreciated how the book did a pretty good job of showing that wherever you are in life and who you are is a culmination of all the things that have happened to you, good or bad, and how you can, I don't know, maybe accept or learn how to deal with bad things when you think about how it got you to where you are. So Saru, the main character, I wouldn't say character, I mean it's a true story, so the person that the story is about, he went through some really hard things. He had hard things happen to him, but he seemed like a very positive person who wanted to look on the good side and the good things that had come. And, you know, maybe we all kind of do that. We rationalize kind of the ends, and that sometimes the way that we get to a place is not our favorite way, but it's still okay. So in that way, it's a little bit, you can appreciate your own life, maybe. When you see what this guy went through as a child, he didn't have a very easy young childhood, and yet he had a lot of love. And then, of course, losing his family and the good thing in his life, and then finding happiness with another family as well. So he had all these things happen. It really puts things into perspective, you know, what you need, what you really need. And he had love, so that's nice. I like the story. I still haven't seen the movie, and I know people say maybe it's not the best movie, but if I read a book, I like to watch the movie. So I will try to report back on that at some point. I still haven't watched The Ballad of Songbirds and Snakes either. So, you know, I'm really getting behind in this season because, you know, I'm a big reader. I don't watch a lot of movies. So I feel like this season 4, I'm getting behind. Also, we're reading a ton of books this season. I want to do it all, but so we'll see. Maybe in the wrap-up of the season, I will have watched everything. And, ooh, we can do like a top 10. What was your favorite movie? I'm going to think about that. Okay. But I will see you next time when we're reading, I think, the BFG is coming up. And I've already read Lessons in Chemistry and The Hating Game. So many good books coming up. Okay, bye.
Thank you for joining us on this episode of Book Interrupted. If you'd like to see the video highlights from this episode, please go to our YouTube channel, Book Interrupted. You can also find our videos on www.bookinterrupted.com.
Are you interested in buying this book? Do you want to order the next book so you can read along? Go to www.bookinterrupted.com/shop to see a complete list of our books. And if you haven't tried them yet, our affiliate partners, The Bookshop,
and Libro.fm both help support your local bookstore where available. Thanks for taking the time to check in and connect. We'll see you next time on Book Interrupted.
Book Interrupted.
Never forget, every child matters.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.